This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. 150 years ago, the United States had two big parties, the Democrats and the Whigs. National politics were dominated by regional rivalries and one big issue, slavery. And at that critical moment, a new political party was born. NPR's Andrea Seabrook takes a look at the summer of 1854.
This is Ripon, Wisconsin, a little town about an hour and a half northwest of Milwaukee. It's known for the Ripon Good Cookie Factory and this white one-room schoolhouse where, on an evening 150 years ago, a group of local residents met and formed the Republican Party.
Hi. Come on in.
The schoolhouse is now a small museum, the walls lined with Republican mementos, prints, photos, and political buttons laud past Republican presidents, like Abraham Lincoln, William Howard Taft, Dwight D. Eisenhower, and Ronald Reagan. Rows of hard wooden benches face the front of the room, where there is a desk and chalkboard, and a cracked yellow map of the United States from the mid-1850s. Museum docent Sue McConnell points to the wide, mostly uncharted expanse between Wisconsin and California. In 1854, she says, Ripon was the frontier.
So much of Wisconsin at that time, too, was unsettled, just open. The northern parts were just deep, deep forests and sort of rolling grassland in the southern parts, but really not much for population.
McConnell says this fresh new territory attracted Europeans and Yankees, people from the Northeast, in search of land and fortune. A small group of families started a utopian commune in Ripon, and the town began to grow. Some of the men established local committees of Democrats and Whigs, but historian Russell Blake, who teaches at Ripon College, says that wasn't enough for many of Ripon's early citizens. They wanted a party that was strictly anti-slavery.
From the standpoint of the people in Washington, to keep either national party together, they had to unify with Southerners. And in essence, what you really see in 1854 already is a sense that if you disagree about slavery, you may not be able to keep the country together.
Blake stands outside the white schoolhouse, recounting how some local citizens tried to be happy with a small third party. It was called the Free Soil Party, and it stood against slavery, but had little political power in Washington. In early 1854, a Ripon citizen named Alvin Beauvais gathered local residents in the schoolhouse to protest the Kansas-Nebraska Act. That was a bill in Congress that would permit slaveholding in the new Western territories. 54 citizens of Ripon attended. Historian Blake says Democrats, Whigs, and Free Soilers all banded together into one new coalition, the Republican Party.
And it didn't so much have to do with a hatred of how black people were being treated under slavery or anything else. It had to do more in principle with the idea that people in America shouldn't be slaves, that a man should be able to go as far in life as his work and his education could take him and not be bound by his station in life. Those, of course, are core American values. Slavery goes against all of those values.
Soon after, local Republican Party committees began popping up all over the northern states. Later in the summer of 1854, Michigan held the first state Republican convention in the town of Jackson. And by the end of that year, done in by the passage of the Kansas-Nebraska Act, the National Whig Party dissolved. Pro-slavery Whigs gravitated to the Democrats. Anti-slavery Whigs joined the new Republican Party, which held its first national convention in 1856. 4 years later, the party nominated Abraham Lincoln and began half a century of dominating the White House. There are still traits in the modern Republican Party that can be traced back to its birth. University of Texas professor Lewis Gould has just published a tome on the 150 years of the Grand Old Party. Gould says that from the time it held the Union together, one of the party's hallmarks has been its claim to being more pro-America.
That position, that the Republicans are inherently more patriotic than the Democrats, is encoded in the DNA of most Republicans.
Another Republican theme that goes back to the beginning is the central role of Christianity. From the days of Lincoln, many in the party believed that the power of government should be used to shape a more godly society. In the early 20th century, that led to, among other things, the prohibition of alcohol. And historian Gould says since the Republican Party started so small, it learned one thing very early. party discipline.
They follow discipline. They preach discipline. You don't see them trashing each other in public. In fact, they're so disciplined that when they go on talk shows, that there's a toll-free number they have arranged for people where you can call up and get the talking points so that you'll be on message when you go on the talk shows.
By contrast, the Democratic Party has always been seen as a looser coalition of varying, even opposite ideas. Will Rogers once said, "I don't belong to any organized political party. I am a Democrat." But when it comes to the size of government, the modern Republican Party has strayed far from its roots, at least in ideology. What started out as the party of larger government and stronger federal laws had completely reversed its stance by the time Ronald Reagan was inaugurated in 1981.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Today, the Republican Party preaches a smaller government and stronger laws on the state level. It fashions itself the party of fiscal discipline and favors tax cuts over government social programs. But GOP historian Gould says that stated ideology doesn't always match the actions of Republican presidents.
If you told Republicans in 2000 that you would have a much bigger government and a much larger national debt and a huge deficit, they would have said, well, Al Gore has won.
George W. Bush is the 43rd president of the U.S. and the 18th Republican president. He will be renominated this week by a party that is now split on some issues. Many fiscal conservatives are angry about the rapid expansion in the size and spending of the federal government under this president and the deficits it's racked up. But on other issues, President Bush hews very closely to traditional Republican ideology, especially his unequivocating pro-America stance and his frequent use of religious terms and concepts. These are themes that still play well with the citizens of heartland towns, including Ripon, Wisconsin. Sitting back behind the Little White Schoolhouse is another local GOP landmark, the Republican House. This old brick home was the headquarters of party leaders in the 1950s who hoped to turn Ripon into a Republican tourist park and resort. But the business failed, and the building changed hands several times until the early 1990s when a Vietnamese immigrant named Keen Lam bought the place and turned it into what it is today, the Republican House Chinese Restaurant. When Lam bought the place and stripped the wallpaper, he found a mural painted behind the bar featuring five Republican presidents. Lam points at their portraits.
Coolidge, Hap, Roosevelt, Grant, and Lincoln. But the one over there, you know, a lot of people, they don't know, you know, they said Bush said no. Coolidge.
Are you a Republican?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I'm sure I'm a Republican. If you want to stay here in business.
On the sidewalk outside, you can stand between the Republican House Chinese Restaurant and the Little White Schoolhouse, a few feet and 150 years apart. Andrea Seabrook, NPR News.
Wisconsin is one of the key states in this year's presidential election. And tomorrow, Morning Edition's own Renee Montaigne goes door to door with the campaigns as they search for undecided voters.